CBS Eye on the World with Professor Antonia Colobasciano. She's in Bucharest at the National University of Political Science and Public Administration. She has a new book coming about the geopolitics and geoeconomics of borderlands and of all of Eurasia. And that's what we're discussing. It's not just talk about Ukraine, and that doesn't matter to Afghanistan, or that doesn't matter to China. No, it all connects. Talk about the Philippines, then that doesn't matter to Russia, or that doesn't matter to Berlin. No, it all connects. The World Island has a much clearer sense of this through history. And Antonia is featuring three geographical, geopolitical thinkers, all gone now. Alfred Lethaer Bahan of the Naval War College, born in 1840. Halford Mackinder, born in London in 1861. And Professor Nicholas Speakman, born in Europe and left us in the 1940s, a young man, all thinking about the World Island. Speakman called it containment, but the U.S. is no longer practicing containment. Antonia, before we go to the U.S., I had forgotten that Russia had overtures to the Duterte government and that Duterte had twice visited Moscow. Now that there's a new government inviting the U.S. back, is Russia still maintaining its relationship with Manila?
As long as I know, yes, especially on the energy side. So there hasn't been necessarily very much move there. However, even if these countries have been pretty much disturbed at the Ukrainian invasion, so Duterte was the president that basically made history by becoming the first president of the Philippines, going to Moscow twice. And obviously, there are Russian energy companies getting into the country and staying and trying to stay there for longer by establishing agreements there. But at the same time, when the Ukrainian war started, it was basically these countries in South Asia Sea that saw a similarity to their posturing vis-a-vis China this time. And they were basically against, and they voted against the UN vote on Ukraine against Russia. So that basically gives a signal that while Russia obviously wants to keep the good ties, and there is reasoning for businesses to keep good ties in Southeast Asia, the political of it all means that they need to rethink strategy. So this is where the realignment really begins. And this is what I mean by saying that the next node after the Black Sea geopolitical node is going to be in Southeast Asia. Even if we are not going to have a military conflict there, we are likely going to have a lot of rethinking in terms of strategy and a lot of realignment being done during the next months as we are dealing with the global economic war.
To the United States, the withdrawal from Afghanistan was a catastrophe. It's an ongoing catastrophe. We have headlines now saying that the jihadists are using Afghanistan again as a staging area for transnational attacks. In any event, the U.S. withdrew. The U.S. is generally withdrawn from the Middle East. But if I follow your case carefully, that doesn't have as the weight of significance as if the U.S. withdrew from the Black Sea and the South China Sea, which is not happening. So as long as the U.S. stays a naval power involved in the Black Sea and the South China Sea, it is a great power in the World Island. Is that correct?
That is correct. So as long as you keep the nodes under control, in a sense of having an influence over the nodes, you are keeping yourself as a great power because you have a share of the global trade flows. You have a share of what's going on militarily. So that's correct.
And in the contest for the South China Sea, Russia's there, as you've evidenced with the Philippines, and they also have a longstanding relationship with Vietnam, a communist power. Russia's present, China's present, the U.S. is present, and they balance each other off. They maintain each other in this stable area of contest. How do they think about it? You say that not one can be supreme, so they're all participating in a fashion like prize fighters? Is that how it works for them?
Well, right now it seems like it. What I mean by saying that you have to keep the balance of these nodes and make them work for you so you can basically get into the global trade flows, it means that you have to deal with your own corridor and your own interest. So, for instance, take Russia and the South China Sea. The reason it is there is not only because it needs to balance against the U.S. And to a certain extent against China, but because it needs a corridor. It needs an alternative to the traditional market in the European continent. So it needs to make sure that it has the flow secured on that part of the world. At the same time, while we are talking India as becoming a middle power, for instance, and working with Russia, North-South, or even Southeast Asia corridors, we are discussing basically trade alliances that are being made into political alliances. Now, this basically means that
we have 30 seconds, Antonia. Go ahead.
That the more the war in Ukraine goes on, the more we are going to see these realignments in action. And they are going to be both tensions and cooperation between these powers. They are going to coordinate, if not cooperate.
Antonia Colobasciano in Bucharest, Romania, helping us understand the 21st century's balance of power and borderlands in the world island, Eurasia. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,